You say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be.
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo and oh man, do we have a great show. I'm telling you, it's going to be another, we say it every week, I go, you know, it's going to be a great show. Well, listen, I know this is going to be a great show because I could tell you something. Sometimes I get to do a book that I think sometimes is just for me. I mean, I mean, trust me, it is for you too. But I mean, sometimes I get a book and I come across it and I go, oh man, this is right in my wheelhouse, right? Well, so my new friend, Kevin Hannigan, sent me his book called Turning Data into Wisdom, right? And okay, and you go, oh, well, no, wait, Jay, no. No, don't, please don't do this to us with numbers. Oh, please don't do this. I'm begging you. For the love of everything that is good, don't do this. No, wait, listen to me. First of all, I'm going to tell you something about Kevin's book. First of all, this book is just meaty. I mean, it's full of great stuff. Here's the problem. The problem is that we have access today to more numbers than we've ever had before. And the truth of the matter is we have a reluctance to want to look at the numbers. But there's something else that goes on here. Not only are we reluctant to learn the numbers and know what they mean, we don't truly understand how the numbers work. Meaning that what we assume about numbers is not what is meant by numbers. And numbers can help us make better decisions. And what we don't understand is we have a tendency to kind of just want to go with our gut. And, you know, we had Dr. Gleb Tversky on here who wrote a book literally called on this show called Never Go With Your Gut. Because, you know, what happens is our gut is oftentimes more wrong than right. Matter of fact, most of the time it's more wrong than right. Numbers are numbers. Right? They can help us, if we combine both our intuition and the numbers together, it can help us lead to better, sound decisions. And at the end of the day, business owner, listen to me, at the end of the day, your business survives when it comes to one thing, numbers. It's the truth. Profit is a number. You know, could you be more profitable? What if you knew your numbers better? What if you knew a different way of looking at numbers? Could you predict how numbers could be? Oh, see, that's predictive statistics, right? Right? We may even talk a little bit about prescriptive statistics. You go, what? Oh, yeah. Prescription. Think of prescriptions, right? And then there's inferential statistics, which I taught at colleges, right? And by the way, they're important, right? But you may not understand them. They're thrown around at you, by the way, all the time, whenever you go to the news. Inferential statistics are all around us. All the time. If you're a sports fan, do you know what you hear every week on your favorite sports station? Analytics. What the heck does that mean? Well, thankfully we got Kevin Hannigan to help us out here because we're gonna get to the bottom of all that. All right, before we do that though, let's do what we do every week, right? And that is I walk you through the four areas of your life. Listen, we're four-part people. We're physical, mental, emotional, spiritual people. You know the drill here if you've been with this show. And by the way, if you haven't and this is your first time, well, welcome. And we know you got a lot of choices. Thank you for doing that. And for those of you who are watching all over the world on DBTV, thank you for watching us on DBTV and August 1st, right? Everybody knows. We're going to be on Apple TV. We're going to be on Samsung TVs. We're going to be on LG TVs. And we're going to be on Android TVs. We've always been on Roku devices and Amazon Fire Sticks. But now we're going to be available in 250 million homes. So you know what? It's great to have you watching us. And, of course, all of you who listen to us by terrestrial radio, thank you for tuning in. Tell your radio station that we appreciate you. So what we do here is on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being miserable, 10 to be outstanding, we rank ourselves and how well we're doing in the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. So, for instance, in the physical area, if you would rank yourself from a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say your training is going when it comes to eating right, getting enough exercise, drinking enough water, and getting enough sleep? You know, and other things that require your physical attention, right? Whatever that number is, a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being an average, it's okay. Right. The point is, that's a starting place that you can get better the next 7 days. Right. Because you could do something now to change it. right? There's probably something you shouldn't be eating, you shouldn't be drinking, you could be going to bed a little earlier, right? You know, you could be drinking more water instead of some of the things that you drink. There's a lot of things you could do to improve yourself. So that's your first number. Your second number is the intellectual or mental number, right? Intellectually, what are you doing to help yourself grow, right? And that could be personally, it could be professionally, right? Some people think that they've grown enough professionally and they don't do anything. They could think, I know it all. That's a problem because we have to be in a constant state of learning, right? What are you doing to really understand the changes in your profession and how you can grow with them? What are you doing to understand how you need to grow as a person? Maybe it's understanding how you work in your marriage or your relationships or you're with your children, right? That's intellectual. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say you're doing there? Okay. Second number, third number is emotional, right? And, you know, fact of the matter is Daniel Goleman and others have written extensively about emotional quotients and emotional intelligence. And the truth is we make it really simple on this show. What we do is on a scale of 1 to 10, we ask two questions. How well are you able to handle your emotions, that is control them under stress and pressure, right? That's the first part. And the second part is how well are you able to tap into and understand the emotions of other people? When you put that together, what number would you give yourself on that scale of 1 to 10? And then finally, the fourth area is the spiritual area. And the truth of the matter is, some people will say, I'm not spiritual. Fact is, we're all spiritual. We all live by faith, right? You got up this morning. And when you put a spoon into your cereal and put it in your mouth, you believed, maybe not consciously, that it wasn't poisonous because you ate it. That's faith. When you step off the curb, when the walkway has says to walk, right? You believe by faith that nobody was going to hit you. It's faith. We walk by faith every day. The chair you're sitting in right now, you didn't know if it was going to hold you. In reality, you think it would because you got faith that it's going to, right? The truth of the matter is we all live by faith. But then there's a second part of it, and that is in the spiritual. It's like, you know, what do you run to that gives you peace in the midst of chaos? And you have to ask yourself the question, does it work for you? So whether that's God or nature or meditation, whatever it is, the question becomes, is it working? Right? And then what might you need to do to change it? So what number would you give yourself there? Those four numbers are like the air in the tires of your car. The truth of the matter is if the air in the tires of your car are not right, what happens? The car doesn't run right. It can veer to the left, it can veer to the right, or you can ruin something over the course of time if you don't get that right air pressure. And that's what we're trying to do, is get the right air pressure to the right level, right, which is a 10. And then what we're trying to do then is roll so that we're even, right, that all four tires are even, and that's what we're going for. So, you know what, I encourage you, find your areas to work on. You can work on it. We can all work on something every day, every week. Ladies and gentlemen, please let me introduce to you my new friend. His name is Kevin Hannigan. He is, excuse me while I'm kind of stuttering here, but we had a little glitch before the show with some internet things. But Kevin Hannigan is the chief learning officer at Q. Is it Click?
Click. Yeah, Click. Okay. It's like Click, but Q.
Right, it's Q-L-I-K. Click. A data analytics company and a Fast Company top 10 innovator for social good. Kevin uses data and analytics to transform, innovate, and continuously improve organizations to make them the best that they can be. His passion is the intersection of business, technology, learning, and psychology. Boy, we have a lot in common there. He has authored a number of computer software and language books and has been a featured blogger for Click. Through many years of working in a variety of business and industries, he's been able to leverage technology and psychology along with data and analytics to improve organizational performance and transform businesses into high-performing organizations. He lives in Massachusetts with his wife, Shannon, and their four children. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show and welcome for the first time, Kevin Hannigan. Welcome to A New Direction, Kevin.
Wow, thank you for having me, Jim. Really looking forward to this. I loved your opening, too, by the way.
Thank you.
Put my numbers down.
Well, thank you. You know what? It's just to kind of get us kind of thinking in a way of, you know, what can I grow? And by the way, if you're a little low on the intellectual growth, guess what? You tuned into this show. And good for you, because what that means is that you are stimulating your intellectual growth. So you know what? Give yourself a click, because you just did something good for you. All right. So, Kevin, I one of the things that inspired me about this book was that You know, whenever we read a book of numbers, so often it's so left-brained that what happens is we don't think about the right brain. And you're one of those people who appreciates and understands the power of the numbers, but you also understand that there's intuition that has to go involved. How do you balance that for people when they want to talk analytics and data and numbers, and yet at the same time, you know, we have to ultimately make a decision, and that's generally emotional?
Well, I mean, that's the great point. That's the million-dollar question, is how do you balance the theory, the numbers, the analytics with, okay, someone says we have a 50% chance, there's a 70% chance that it's going to rain today. Well, you have to make a decision on that. If you're just walking in the park, do you bring an umbrella? You do this risk-reward, right? Well, I don't care if I get wet, so it's fine. But what if your decision was, I'm going to go to a job interview? Then maybe, yes, you'd answer it differently. And I think that's why I love this space, because you have the numbers, but then they mean something different to everyone based off of the question they're asking, what their coverage of risk and their acceptability of it is. And so you could ask the same question to two very identical people and get different answers. And that's okay. And that kind of fascinates me, because I grew up in a math world where 2 + 2 is always 4. So you never learn that, well, there isn't always an absolute truth. There is some subjectivity if you're asking very general questions.
So one of the things that you talk about in this book, and is that there is this it's a data informed decision making, yep. And of course it's a 6-phase process with a 12-step process and 12 steps that are in part of that 6 phases. So talk to us about what data-informed decision-making is, so that we could kind of wrap our minds around that, so that, because we're probably not utilizing the data that in a way that we should be, and we're probably not understanding how to make a decision based on data.
Yeah, and so actually when you started out and talked about, you know, don't use your gut, which I agree with, the gut's valuable, but it needs to be checked. I put people in another category where they use numbers and data, but they don't use them correctly. And to me, that's worse than not even using them at all. So data-informed decision-making to me is you have a spectrum. On one spectrum, you have someone who only uses their intuition and their gut, and it gets them so far and they run into issues. On the complete other end of the spectrum, you have someone who finds a point of data. And to me, data is numbers, but it's also information. It could be qualitative. It could be a comment that one of your customers said. You hold on to that data so strong that anything that someone tries to tell you that challenges that, your brain ignores it. And that is the equivalent of you drive off the cliff and someone says, why'd you do that? My GPS told me to. You're not using your brain. The data is telling you something wrong. You kind of suspend common sense. You suspend the logic of, if I drive off the cliff, there's a good chance I'm going to get hurt. Let's do it because the data tells me. And so data-informed is in the middle, where you're leveraging the insights that are coming from the data, but you're balancing it with your perspective, your context, what the question is, what your ability to execute on the decision is. And that again, is why I love the balance. You have to balance both sides of the brain.
And this is where we run into, and by the way, and I appreciate you doing this in your book, you talk about there's the top 5 hard skills and the top 5 soft skills. And I think this is kind of important, because it's a skill set.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and by the way, even with the opening of my show, you know, I tell people, you know, I walk it through physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, right? But you know, what you're working on here in each one of those areas, you're working on your skills in each one of those areas. And I think the problem has been typically when it comes to numbers, we tend to go, well, either you're a numbers person or you're not a numbers person. But the truth of the matter is there's a set of skills. I'm not saying that you have to be a mathematician, and I don't think that's what you're saying either, but there are a certain set of skills that you can start to develop to help you make better decisions. True?
Absolutely. You do not have to be a data scientist. You do not even have to love data. But you have to have some level of skills, because we're, like you said, every news channel, especially during COVID, everyone's showing charts. But what does that chart mean?
Right.
You might infer something from it that's actually not there that causes you to never leave the house, or quite opposite, go out thinking that it's never going to happen. So it's a set of skills which are not really technical skills. I kind of call them forever skills or soft skills that lets you just understand what the data is telling you.
So let's talk through these some of the hard skills here. First one is data extraction. What is that skill, and what do we need to do there?
It's understanding. So it starts with a question. There's a question you need answered. Let's use a COVID example. In the middle of the pandemic, should my family go on vacation? Like, that's a question. Well, you want to have a data-informed decision, so you need to extract data that's relevant to help you answer that. Sounds simple, right? Just find it online. But it's not always the right data. Sometimes it's not in the right format. Sometimes it's answering the wrong thing. So without going too far into the weeds, like with COVID, if someone went on Google and typed in, how do I check the prevalence of COVID, like how much it's spreading, you're going to get 20 different answers of different mathematical solutions. It's not statistics. Are we measuring the positivity rate? Are we measuring the number of tests? Are we measuring confirmed cases? Mm-hmm. All of those measured it, but we need to be able to understand for our decision, what does that really mean to us? Like, what is that telling me? Like, if I have a positivity rate of 5%, what does that mean?
Got it.
And how can I use that to make that decision? And that does not require you to know science. Doesn't require you to know statistics.
Right. Okay. So next one is data transformation and standardization.
Common example, you get data from different sources. And again, it could be numbers, but it could be just words and evidence. Many times they're not in the right format. They might be showing you a summary. They might be showing you a total. And you need to kind of extrapolate to that. So if you're in a business and you're trying to go to market with a new product, and your typical audience tends to be one gender versus the other, you don't care about the data that relates to the genders you're not focusing on. You have to transform it and remove some of that data so it's relevant to your question. Otherwise, it just adds in extra what they call noise and chatter that makes it harder to make a decision.
Okay. One of the things you say, you talk about basic math and understanding of data, and I think we kind of get the basic math and understanding of data, but then there's two pieces to this. There's the quantitative and the qualitative data. And I don't think we have too much of a problem with that, but we could be better, couldn't we, at making sure we're retrieving more of the data, or certainly just getting some more basic math skills down.
Absolutely. I feel like we learn it in primary school, elementary school, and then we stop using it because we all have calculators, we all have spreadsheets. But the problem with that is it's not so much needing to learn how to calculate it. It's needing to learn how to infer what that means to me and how you can use that to make a decision. So basic math skills could be understanding the difference when someone says, here's a mean value versus a median value. Huge potential decision could be dramatically change the decision based off of which variable or which statistic was used. You don't have to calculate them, but you kind of have to understand how to question which one was used and why.
Which leads us to the understanding foundational statistics. And you know, you and I talked for the show. I taught stats in college, inferential stats, and. I feel like this is a really weak area for most people, is they do not understand inferential statistics. And this is something they probably need to get better at, don't they?
Absolutely. I think in the world we live now with business intelligence software everywhere, we tend to be accustomed to thinking we have all of the data we need. But with inferential statistics, you had mentioned you see it all over the news if you're doing polling, presidential elections. You can never poll everyone in the population. So you take a sample and then you extrapolate and infer based off of that. And we're not saying that the audience, you need to know inferential statistics. What we're saying, if someone comes back and gives you a confidence interval or, you know, how level of significant it is, that is not your way to, that's not a prediction. So, you know, we heard with the presidential election, everyone got it wrong. They might have gotten the sampling wrong, but the elections might say that one party has a 80% chance of winning.
Right.
That does not mean if the other party that had 20% won, it was wrong.
Right.
It meant it was one of the 20 times.
Right.
Like if the weatherman says there's a 50% chance of rain, the way they calculate that is they look back at all of the days that had a similar weather pattern and on 50% of those days it rains. It doesn't mean that they're wrong when they say it's not raining. It means that it happened to be one of those other days. I think that's the big thing with inferential, is many people see it and they think that the number that's higher, it's an absolute truth. And if it's not right, it's wrong. Well, completely wrong.
Right. Right. This is, you know, this is the problem. You know, I remember when we were trying to teach statistics on weather, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, there's a 50% chance of rain. All right. Well, what that can mean is that there's a 50% chance that it may rain in your area. It's going to rain. It just may not be you. Right? I mean, it's a little bit more complicated than that. But the truth of the matter is, they know it's going to rain. It just may not rain on you, or it may rain on you. If it's a 10% chance, you have a 90% chance that it's raining, but 10% chance that a 90% chance it's not going to rain. But by the way, there's still a 10% chance it could rain on you, you know, because exactly. In your area. And it's a very difficult thing. And I think this is the other thing with statistics that I want to kind of inferential statistics. It's not about 100% anything, like you say. There is it's about probabilities.
Correct.
You know, when we tell people, when we do a statistic, and I'm just trying to educate everybody out there, when we do a statistic, right, and depending on what the statistic is, whether it's a t-test or NOVA, or and I know those are funny words, but we do a statistic, we have what we call a probability value, or a p-value. And so what happens is we will say p less than 0.05, which means that we are saying that there's a 95% chance that our result did not occur by chance, that it was part of the result. That doesn't mean that it's 100% accurate. And I think that's, Kevin, I think that's the piece that is irritating to me, is that people think that when they see a statistic, that's it. There's the answer. Right? And that's so problematic. How do we get people to think differently about that?
Part of it is awareness. I mean, there is the aspect of it. You're right. A lot of people assume probability is a prediction and an absolute truth, and right or wrong, which it isn't. It's a probability. But also, it's the way our brains are wired, right? We have bias innate in us. And I know that's jumping ahead a little bit down the process, but our brains want to see things that validate our opinions. We don't want to see things that contradict it. So we don't know it. We're subconscious. But if we say we have an opinion and we go and see a data point that might say something remotely similar to what we're thinking, we're going to have that aha moment. So one of the ways to address it is have an understanding of probability and what that means. But two, it's have an understanding that we all have bias, and there are things we can do to mitigate it to help us make better decisions.
Yeah, awareness is so key. So folks, we're giving you awareness, if anything else. Folks, you're listening to Kevin Hannigan, and it's his book, Turning Data into Wisdom, and you're listening to him here on A New Direction. Folks, let me just say this. Ambic Physical Therapy, my physical therapists, they could be your physical therapists too. They're not just mine. They could be yours as well. Listen, I want to just tell you something. They will design a customized treatment program that's designed specifically for you. And they work with athletes, professional athletes, athletes of all kinds, and just people, regular people like me. So when you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, and your epic results, start with Epic Physical Therapy. That's epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors is my other sponsor. And matter of fact, it's now Linda Kraft Team Realtors. Sorry, they got rid of the ampersand. Linda Kraft Team. And you know what? She has a team of people. And by the way, she's been in business for over 35 years. Her original people, she sold her very first house to her, still come to her today, as well as so many other people to come to see her, new and old folks that have been with her for a long time. And listen, I'm going to just tell you something. When it comes to customer service, her clients call her the legend of customer service. So when you're ready to sell your home or buy your home, regardless of where you live, start with Linda Kraft and Linda Kraft Team Realtors. That's lindacraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. And also, hey, need to give a shout out to Hint Water. They are the official beverage of DBTV. So if you're watching us on TV everywhere, just know that, you know what? Hint is the official beverage. And you know what? You know, grab one. This is the strawberry kiwi. It's delicious. I'm just telling you, try it if you haven't, because they are really good. Hint Water, thank you.
My favorite too.
You like it too? We're back here with Kevin Hannigan and his book, Turning Data into Wisdom. And we are walking through some of these hard skills. I'm going to jump to the soft skills. I know there was data science is the other thing, and that's artificial intelligence. And we'll get into some of that and machine language. But I want to get into some of these soft skills. Let's talk about the top five soft skills. One of them is systems and enterprise thinking.
It's a different way of thinking about the world. Everything in an organization, think of your business organization. Mm-hmm. If you have a process working that's balanced and then you over-rotate, say you spend a lot of money in marketing, but you don't have the sales pipeline to follow through in the leads, it's imbalanced, or vice versa. And the same thing in life. You were talking about the four tires on the car, the four numbers. Right. You said you want them all to be at the same so they're smooth.
Right.
Imbalanced system would be the front tires are, you know, have a higher number and the back tires have a lower number.
Right.
In organizations and in life, there's always this yin and yang, and we tend to not think about systemic decisions. How does it impact other parts of the system? We tend to think about, you hear the terms in organizations, we're siloed or we have tunnel vision.
Right, right.
Systems thinking allows you to go across that. In organizations or in life and truly understand root causes, which may not even be in your part of the organization or whatever it might be. It might be in a completely other group, but by thinking systemically, you're opening your world into how your organization works and how your life, your family, any structure works together in this yin yang.
Okay. So I know this sounds obvious, but critical thinking, which doesn't seem to be too critical to people nowadays, but let's talk about critical thinking and let's get into a little bit of cognitive bias because that is a problem, isn't it?
It's an absolute problem. We see information everywhere and our brains want to connect to things that we have seen before and relate to our perspectives. And critical thinking is a really important skill because the opposite of having it is you go into a meeting and someone gives you a data point and it says, okay, the numbers are down. We have to materially change our business model. Well, you need to critically think about why could that be true, but it doesn't mean that we should completely change our business model. Why could that be misleading? Why could that not actually be accurate? And it could be because you have a bias. It could be a common one is because you have an assumption. And that assumption is just held to you don't speak it out loud, it's implicit, but it's changing the way you're making the decision. So critical thinking tends to be something that I think we learn as kids. We ask why all the time, we try to be critical, and then through our schooling and through our education and work, we're kind of put in a system where we're not allowed to think critically. We have to kind of go back to that.
Well, and let me just say this about critical thinking too, and cognitive bias. One of the issues is that our biases are unconscious, and typically, I mean, you could be consciously biased and know it, and you just don't care. I get that. That's a whole different person, but oftentimes our biases are so. We don't want to think of them as biases, and there's a ton of them out there, by the way. I mean, you wrote about a bunch of them, but they exist. I mean, you know, I see it all the time, and this is not a political show, but if there's one political candidate over another, and one political candidate says this is this statistic, and the other one says it's this statistic, one is a liar and one's telling the truth, depending on what side of the aisle you're on. Well, that's a built-in bias. Immediately.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, and by the way, this is true of news outlets. If one person says, I follow this particular news outlet, I don't like that one, I like this one, and their statistics are slightly off, well, they believe that statistic and not the other. And so we can be so... biased. I mean, of course, there's other biases, and maybe, I don't know if this is a good place to get into. I don't know if it is right now, but we have to be aware that we have them and that they exist, and that, you know, I think the most difficult thing for people to do is to say, well, what if I'm wrong? Right? I mean, that's, Kevin, that's hard. You know, what if the data that I'm given is wrong?
It is hard. It's hard from a cultural perspective, too. It's hard for humans. But then we grow up in cultures where we're not supposed to, at least in work, we're not supposed to admit we're wrong. And so I, what you're talking about, I call intellectual humility. It's the ability to know, hey, I tried it, it didn't work. Let's admit it and move on. And I'm a huge sports fan, but you see it a lot of times in sports where they'll make a, they'll bring on a player and it doesn't fit with the team culturally. They don't want to give it up because of the money invested. That's the opposite of what we want. We want people to say, okay, it wasn't a good fit. I was wrong. And I know why I was wrong. And here's how we're going to address it. And a lot of times it happens, like you said, unconsciously. We don't know it's happening. And one thing that I guess would fascinate everyone, it all relates to how the brain works. And so this all is based in science. Sometimes I give lectures on bias and people say, that's like voodoo. I don't believe you. This doesn't exist. It doesn't make sense. It's the brain. I'm like, yes, the brain is a computer and all computers are prone to bias, including our own brain.
Well, right. Well, and it's more complicated, right? It's a complicated organ in our body.
Yeah.
You know, because we've talked about this on the show that we have a number of different structures that have to work together in order for us to survive, and these biases are naturally built into us. Because they actually do help us survive. It helps us to make a heuristic decision about things, whether it's safe or not safe. And so these are there built within us to help us determine. But oftentimes what happens with our biases is that we start applying them to areas that they have no business being applied to because we're really not in danger. Right? You're not in potential danger, but we're applying our biases anyway. And so this little structure called the amygdala gets kicked in and our fight and flight and fright and freeze gets all kicked in. And, you know, the hippocampus starts to get activated and the reticular formation, right? We have these structures and they all interact and then they produce all these things. And I'm not trying to get geeky on anybody out here, but the truth of the matter is, you have them for a reason, the built-in biases. It's just that we're applying them wrong, which leads us to the other next soft skill, which is a great way to combat this, is active listening.
Absolutely. If I had one skill that I would have my kids learn, it would be active listening. And what is, you know, frustrating is I took a lot of classes on reading. I took a lot of classes on writing. Our most used communication is listening. I've never taken a course on listening. And so we don't educate people how, and everyone's like, why do I need a course on listening? It's listening. Would you, for the audience, you know, when you're listening unconsciously, you're not listening. What you're really doing is you're looking for words that validate your opinion and they go in, and you're looking for words that don't validate. And all you're doing is thinking about how are you going to respond and tell them they're wrong. You're not actually listening to what they're saying. And so there's a whole concept of dialoguing versus discussion. So you can remove the purpose of trying to say who's right and wrong and just listening. But we don't listen enough. And everyone, I always equated to, when I was younger, I don't know if you remember, there was a game show called Classic Concentration. It's like a big puzzle. Well, everyone has a different piece of the puzzle. And so why wouldn't you want to ask someone what their piece is to get a better decision instead of going on one small corner and saying, I know the answer already, and then being completely wrong.
And the active listening, and by the way, that was so beautiful. We need courses on active listening.
Yeah.
We really, really do. Because it leads into the next soft skill, and that is relationship building. And I don't think it's possible to build a really solid relationship if we're not active listening.
No, and this goes, I'm going on a pedestal, this goes beyond just business. This solves world challenges, right? Mm. We do not active listen, so usually we're not good at relation building, therefore usually we're not good with inclusion and diversity. And the way to help solve all these, we can do courses at the corporate education level, but it starts in schooling. is we need to teach people the importance of, you know, cognitive diversity for inclusion, getting different perspectives. We need to embrace active listening, and we are going to make instantly materially better decisions just with those two.
Yeah, it's you're so right, and it's so true. It's sad because I think we cut off a lot of relationships, and we certainly don't have mental diversity because we kind of are so caught up into wanting to live in our own worlds where everybody agrees with us. And to have people who don't agree or maybe have a different value system or a different opinion, we tend to just immediately dismiss them. And we don't understand that there is data there that we could be utilizing that could actually help us grow, but we're so not interested in that data because it comes from somebody who we don't value the way they think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really. And then, of course, the fifth skill is communicating with data. Talk a little bit about communicating with data and how we can develop that skill as a soft skill.
Yeah, it goes back to the beginning where we started and say there's, you go on the news, there's charts, there's data. Everyone is presenting data, but it's information overload. They're not explaining, you know, the most common challenge I see in organizations is the person that comes up with the insight in this complicated visualization takes the same visualization and then shares it to the stakeholder who happens to be a business decision maker that has no background in data. And they just look at and gloss over and like, I have no idea what you're trying to do. So communicating with data really has three parts. It's the visual. Brains are visual more than verbal. So they connect with visuals. It's the data that you're putting into it, but then it's also the narrative. It's the story you're telling. We forget that a big part of our history and culture is through storytelling from generation to generation. You have to do that in business. So showing someone a visualization saying, I'm going to materially change our business strategy because of this bar chart, no one's going to listen. They're going to say, where's the insight? How does it impact me? You know, what data did you use to validate this? So it's an art form. It's, to your point, left brain, right brain, combining both of those. And this is where we use emotion to our advantage. We're trying to get the emotion of the listener to make it more memorable for them so they can remember and more persuasive.
Let's jump ahead here into chapter three. And I want to move ahead because we kind of touched on cognitive bias. But there's one cognitive bias, and maybe we'll talk about a few others, but I want to hit this one because you made a really big deal about it, and it's groupthink. And when it comes to data, groupthink is so problematic. We've touched on it somewhat. But let's talk about how did we get there, you know, in terms of groupthink when it comes to data, and then how do we undo it?
Yep. So we got there. So groupthink is the idea you're in a team, whether it be a family or an individual, an organization or a church group, whatever. And historically, they've been hierarchical. Groupthink happens when there is either the leader or a majority of that group has an opinion. And you're sitting there saying, you know what, I don't necessarily agree, but if everyone else says it, I must be wrong. Or I don't necessarily agree, but if everyone else says it, I don't want to be the reason why we're still here. So I'm just going to go along. See it in juries all the time. You see it in organizations. And it's really, you know, toxic for a work environment because people have opinions. They know their opinions. They suppress them. They hold that, you know, that, oh, I wish I opened up, especially when it turns out their decision might have been right. So there's several strategies that organizations use. One of the biggest ones is if it is very hierarchical, have the leader be outside, not included. John F. Kennedy actually did this. If anyone wants to go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis in the Bay of Pigs, he learned his lessons from the Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Missile Crisis. He put two different teams together to work on a solution. He stayed out of it, stayed out of decisions, whereas in the first one, he was actually right in the middle. And the military didn't want to, they're like, he's the president. I don't want to, you know, tell him he's wrong. But you see that all the time in organizations. So put groups together that have different mutually exclusive ways of coming at the problem. Then you're going to force it that it's not just one decision and everyone's going. There's always an alternative. And try, if possible, to take the hierarchy out of it. which is really hard in work today because we've had generations of work where it's based off a hierarchical culture.
You know, it's interesting that you brought this up because last week I interviewed the former director of Amazon and John Rossman, and he was on the show and he talked about that while he was at Amazon, they practiced that whole thing of challenging Bezos, you know, all the time, or Bezos challenging the groups and the groups having to know that they have one of their very earliest rules is that there no one down here says that that's not my job, because you need to know everything about what everybody else is doing because you may be on part of that group. And that's interesting because their success is related to that very thing that you're just talking about, trying to avoid that whole groupthink ideal by bringing other people from other groups in that can help mitigate, I guess is a great best word for that.
Absolutely, mitigate is a great word. Yeah. And making sure that those people you bring in are confident enough to challenge and question. That's the other element. You can do the process, but if the people have spent years not challenging authority, it's not like they're going to flip a switch and automatically do it. And again, going back to schooling, I was taught growing up, don't talk back to a teacher. Don't ever challenge a teacher. They're always right. And so I've spent 10 years before I went into the business world suppressing my challenging skills. And now I'm trying to bring them back out again. So I guess there's the organizational challenge, but then there's the individual challenge where some of us just, it's ingrained, don't challenge authority.
I'm thinking about when I was working for a couple of universities. I was challenging authority because they don't like that, by the way. The universities are not built to be entrepreneurial thinkers. And matter of fact, I think I got labeled. I think there was a write up from one university that said I was a loose cannon because I challenged the status quo on it. His name is Kevin Hannigan. His book is entitled Turning Data into, let's see here, let's do it this way. Turning Data into Wisdom. We're having a lot of fun here talking about data. And as you can tell, it's really not just about numbers. There's so much more involved. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. Folks, Epic Physical Therapy, listen, I'm just going to tell you right now, they offer the most advanced top-of-the-line equipment, the Ultra G anti-gravity treadmill, the Normatec compression sleeves, the Game Ready. And then, you know what, they are certified in the most comprehensive cutting-edge treatments like blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping, that's just a few. Listen, if you want to learn how to get that epic relief, that epic recovery, those epic results, start with Epic Physical Therapy. That's epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors for more than 35 years serving the world. They are independently owned and operated, unaffiliated with any national company. So Linda, in the course of her time, as well as her highly skilled professionals, have reached out to places all over the world where they could find and make relationships with the best possible real estate professional in your area. And so they don't have anybody in particular. They're just looking for the best possible real estate professional. So listen, when you're starting your home selling or home buying journey, why not start with Linda Kraft and team, who has got an unbiased opinion for you on where to start your journey, wherever you may live. You can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. It's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here with Kevin Hannigan and his book, Turning Data into Wisdom. And we're just trying to help you learn how to read data. And we've talked about some things you probably weren't so sure that you were going to get when you hear a data show. And that we talked about the soft skills and the hard skills that you can learn that can help you make better decisions and actually use data to your advantage. I'm going to skip here a little bit, Kevin. I was going to talk a little bit more about cognitive bias, but I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. Chapter 4 is phase 1, and that's the ask phase. And we kind of talked about, you know, turning your business questions into analytical questions a little bit. You talked about that. Phase 2 is acquiring phase, and that's finding the sources of all the relevant data. But I want to move into phase 6, chapter 6, phase 3, and that is the analyze phase. Because I think this is where I get it. We've got to find the right numbers, and we've got to ask the right questions to find the right numbers, and we got to put them together and look in the right places. But understanding these numbers is where I think we, the average person, falls into a problem. And so I want to spend the rest of our time here, if that's okay. This understanding analytics and statistics. All right. So first of all, you and I are both sports people. We love sports. We hear all the time things like whip. You know, if you're in football, yak. If you're a football person, it's yak. Whip if you're in baseball, right? And we hear, these are words that we use all the time. Help us understand what are analytics and how is that different than statistics?
Yeah, statistics is usually, it's a great question. Statistics is usually taking, like it within parental, taking a sample of a population to draw inferences from it, which you had mentioned before could be probabilities of something that's going to happen. Analytics is more applying the business, in my mind, applying the business question of what is this insight? The goal of statistics is usually, like you said, a probability number from a t-test or similar. To me, the output of analytics is an insight. It's an aha. Here is what happened. Here is how it's relevant. So the analytics phase is taking your data with your business question and coming up with that insight. Whereas statistics will be a driver to help you come up with the insight, but the analytics is everything encompassing to get you to the insight.
Okay, so let's start with some descriptive analytics, right? And you and I are both we're both kind of stats geeks here. Let's just start simply with what are descriptive analytics, and then let's do the most popular three.
Absolutely. I mean, this goes back to like second grade math. It allows you to, exactly what it says, describe two parts of your data. So describe the central tendency, how the data is dispersed, and how much kind of outliers there are. And the reason that's relevant, you mentioned the most three, is you hear the term average all the time, but from a mathematical point of view, there's different types of average, there's different types of measures of central tendency. And that's a tech word you never have to know. But what you need to know is that when you're looking at averages, let's just take mean and median, they are calculated differently based off of how your data is set up. So let's just take the example that you're looking for a job and you go on a website and you find a job you like and it says the average salary is $100,000 a year. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. Well, would you know that if they use potentially mean versus median, that could be materially different because you're looking at an average. Let's say there's 10 people in that role. Let's say one of them has been there 50 years and they make like $250,000 and the other nine are making like $60,000. That's important for you to know because the average in that case is almost irrelevant to you because you want to know that there's an outlier here and an outlier there. And so in that case, you use a different category. You use the median. And we're not telling anyone on the call, they need to now think about, okay, I just want you, when you see the average, it can be very misleading if you don't know which one's being used. Misleading.
Right. This is the problem. The problem is that sometimes when we say the average, right? I mean, I think most people think that we're calculating the mean average, meaning that we've taken all the numbers together, divided by the number of numbers that you have, and then we come up with a mean. But depending on the statistics, not only is it not only may not be appropriate, right? But also you could be misinterpreted because they may be using the median as the average. or you know what? There's this other little thing called the mode that occasionally gets thrown in when we calculate certain things because it happens the most frequently. We've got to become better. Is that a hard skill or soft skill, or is it a combination of the two that we've got to become better and pay closer attention to when we hear these things descriptively like mean, median, and mode?
I think it's both. It's a soft skill because you have to think, I have to question this. What are they using and why? But we don't tend to question that. To me, that's a soft skill. But then it's a hard skill to know enough math. Again, we're not talking with data science, we're with second grade math, to know the difference between mean and median. It's stuff we all learned back then. We have to come back to it. And I think that's why it's so challenging, is it does require both. It requires someone who's very technical to stop and pause and question, which is hard. And it requires someone who's really good at questioning to know a little bit about basic math to be able to say, nope, we need a different calculation.
All right, so we gave people a little bit of taste of descriptive statistics. Let's talk about inferential statistics, and you know this is my wheelhouse, so you know I'm going to love. I want to talk about this. First of all, I think when we think of statistics, this is probably the thing that we see most often, right? Inferential statistics are presented most often when we talk about COVID or sales, or right? It's typically inferential. Was that true?
I would say so, especially nowadays, like you said, polling, any of those things where you're looking at something that is not a full data set. In business, we tend to have, like when it's sales numbers, we tend to have all the sales numbers. Mm. It's only when you're looking at, you know, seemingly larger populations, case tests, polling, things like that.
Okay, so when we're doing, by the way, inferential statistics mean that we are inferring about a bigger, as you talk about, inferring based on taking a subset of a smaller, of a larger population, we're taking a subset of that population. Let's talk about, though, when we do statistics, one of the issues, and people don't pay attention to it, but you and I do, right? Isn't one of the first things that you look at is, what's the population makeup that they did?
Absolutely.
Is it the first thing, shouldn't be the first thing that we look at before we decide on if the statistic is accurate or not? Shouldn't we look at, Does who you polled really representative of everybody that should be represented?
We see it all the time, not just in politics. If I'm in a business and I poll everyone who has filled out a complaint on my website, I am getting people who are complaining about my website. I'm not getting the other side, or vice versa.
Right.
If I find people, it's just. Yeah, and I don't think there's enough people out there that know. We want to trust that data scientists know what they're doing.
Right.
The problem with that is there's so many tools out there where you can be citizen data scientists, where you can be just dangerous enough to come up with these statistics and then throw them out there at people. And that's where we still have to question them. We're not saying everyone has to go back and learn how to do statistics, but everyone needs to know how to interpret them and challenge them and question them. Like question, what was the sample size? How big was the population? Mm. How did you collect it?
Right. Yeah. So let's play that out a little bit further, because the truth of the matter is what you're saying in this book and what you're saying just now, and I agree with this, and I've taught this in my experimental methods classes to undergraduates, is you have to have a healthy amount of skepticism in order for science to work. You have to always question the result. And it's a healthy thing, right? It's not a bad thing to go, all right, you know, challenge the result. Why are we so reluctant to want to be skeptical or to say, you know, I want to, here's something you say in the book, look for alternative evidence, right?
Yeah. I don't know the answer to your question other than it's work. People don't do it because it's work. But you look at the industries that do it well, scientists. They have the scientific method. They have a hypothesis. Their whole process is predicated on trying to disprove it. And then when they can't disprove it, they say, okay, let's assume it's true. Business, we have an opinion, and we do everything we can to validate it. We do the complete opposite. But then you go to the doctor, and the doctor is really good. Like, they'll take your vital signs, they'll take your symptoms, and they'll start out at the big thing. You have everything from a common cold to a debilitating disease. And they'll keep weeding it down, all of these options, till they come out with like one or two or three. They'll treat one, see if it works, and go to the other. We don't do that in business. We don't do that in life. We take the shortcut, which is, this one will help me in life, so let's hope it's this one, and let's throw all my marbles in this one. Just keep our fingers crossed that there's nothing else.
Yeah, this is a real problem. And matter of fact, let's talk about one of the most common problems that we have when it comes to statistics, and that is mistaking causation for correlation and vice versa, because that's a huge problem in our world today and in business, is that correlation is not causation.
There, I could speak forever on. I mean, you can have, everyone has tools now, right? Everyone has Excel. Everyone can do a scatter plot that shows two variables And if the line looks straight, then they're like, wow, there's a correlation. They must relate things. There's a that whole website that shows crazy correlations that are not causation. But this is where it gets real, is some of those times they're so obvious, you can tell. But what's really happening is there's another piece of the data that's really driving the relationship that's hidden. That's why you have to question it. I would encourage anyone who's not a statistician but is now saying this is not relevant to me, go on Google, type in Simpson's paradox. It sounds complicated. It shows a trend line based off of the, you can basically say, let's use a baseball analogy. Player A had a higher batting average than player B this year. They had a higher batting average than player B last year. They had a higher batting average than player B 3 years ago. You add them all together, player B has a higher batting average than player A. That sounds illogical. It's a paradox. You can have, so it really goes back to the question. If the question is over the lifetime, who is a better batting average? But if the question is for these very specific, it's because the year is driving the results. Something might have been different in the ball. Maybe one had more at bat. The population was bigger. Anyone can draw a scatter plot, and anyone can infer something from there that is extremely misleading. And that's why it's dangerous.
Kevin, we've been on an hour.
That's crazy. I feel like 5 minutes.
I know. Our statistics are flawed, brother. tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Website, kevinhanning.com. One of my passions is teaching data literacy, which is this. So go to the dataliteracyproject.org if you're interested in the book, which Jay's holding up, Turning Data into Wisdom. Just go on Amazon, type it in, or type in my last name. They can link to it from my website as well. And hopefully everyone realizes it's not for data scientists. It's for a common person that needs to make better decisions in life and in business.
His name is Kevin Hannigan. He was awesome, wasn't he? And you know what, folks? I say this to you every week, right? You're in control of three things in your life: your attitude, your effort, and getting back up again. Listen, it may be difficult. You may be going through circumstances that are tough, but you're always in control of your attitude. You're always in control of your excellence. That's your effort. And you're always in control of your resilience. And that means that you can take the first step to getting back up. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest. It's going to be another great book. It's going to be another great show. And as I say to you all over the world, thank you so much. And ciao, everybody. Things are gonna change. You can find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come. Your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength. Don't worry. Different